I just felt like it was a little bit of a kick in the balls, to be honest.
It came a lot sooner than I thought that I would be the oldest player on the team.
That's all you got, brother. That's all you got.
The word of the day would have been hyper-realism.
We're bad at soccer, but we're good on a bagel.
Holding the high line with Rabbi and Red, talking the rapids and turning heads, with questions from you and analysis. In your car, in your home, thank you for tuning to Holding the High Line.
Hello, Colorado Rapids fans. You are listening to Holding the High Line with Rabbi and Red. My name is Matt Pollard. It is Tuesday, June 4th, 2024, the 80th anniversary of when D-Day was originally supposed to happen, and it's also National Hug Your Cat Day. So if you have a cat, go hug your cat. Real Madrid won Champions League because of course they did. Moise Bombito and Cole Bassett are on their way to national team duty while the rest of the Rapids first team gets some much-needed R&R. And the Rapids lost two road games last week, and unfortunately, we need to talk about it during free space. Joining me now, the Lewis Nixon to my Major Dick Winters, Rabbi Mark Goodman, Flash.
I love Thunder. I love a Band of Brothers reference. I think it's so, the fact that we're both like experts in it, and I don't know about you, I also have full recognition of full knowledge of the Pacific, and I did a full watch of Masters of the Air, which was really, really. Matt, did you watch it, Matt?
No, Masters of the Air is on my list. I'm
bump it all the way to the top. It's really worth it. It's you know, I think the only downside of it, you know, now we're doing movie reviews with TV reviews with Rabbi and Red. The only downside of it from my perspective is, although it's very convincing and very entertaining, and it's not bad at all. The fact that they have to use a lot of CGI, and by comparison, Band of Brothers relies on almost no CGI because it didn't really exist back then at a quality level that was convincing, which means that they had to, like, you know, really do the thing and really build the tanks and really, like, that's notable. But I mean, you know, it's B-17 combat. Like, it's a lot harder to do cinematically than it is, you know, just CGI it.
I can't remember what the number was, Mark, but so there was, you've seen Dunkirk, right?
Yeah, great movie.
Yes, great movie.
Not easy viewing, though. Really kind of like, man, I saw it in a theater. I had a day off, and I just went to it like a matinee on a Tuesday. And it is hard to be anxious for 3 hours straight. Like,
yeah.
It is really edge of your seat, like, oh my god, what's gonna happen kind of stuff. So
yeah, if a history lesson was a 70 minute panic attack, that's basically what Dunkirk is. But so there's, I remember, Mark, there was they spent Christopher Nolan, I think, was the director, and they wanted to minimize their CGI, so they specifically, like, the all of the aircraft that crash in that, like, they actually crashed. And I don't remember if, like, there was a controversy because, like, they paid a bunch of money to acquire the Messerschmitt 109s and then the submarine Spitfires and then crashed them. And I don't remember what the recovery was, but, like, they spent a lot of money to get these, you know, antique living pieces of functioning history to then proceed to shoot them down. And so,
oh my God,
you know, you imagine, you think about, like, the going back to World War One movies, you think about 1917 budget wise and with the trenches they had for the final scene where Schofield runs down the trenches as it's getting bombed and the guys are charging into no man's land. They only had, like, between the existence of what they constructed with the trenches and then the explosives they had, they only had room for like six takes. So, like, can you imagine if, like, you know, one of the historic, like, Spitfires, you know, ditches and then gets sunk and then it turns out they didn't film it? So yes, to your point, how we remember this history and then also how we preserve it and then how we create kind of these living documentaries as everyone, we've kind of built out this media of covering all of these is a really interesting question. Like how Sunderland Till I Die kicked off this renaissance that we are in from a soccer documentary viewing standpoint that was ultimately the inspiration for, we don't get Welcome to Wrexham if Sunderland Till I Die does not happen. And so in that regard, Band of Brothers and all these other ones, everybody's daddy functionally is Saving Private Ryan. So yes.
Yep.
And so we take a moment to remember one of my grandfathers was in a tank on D-Day, and so very excited about the 80th anniversary coming up in 2 days' time at time of recording. Yeah. Mark, let's get into some soccer discussions that we have. First, let's talk about the international break. Cole Bassett will be heading off to join the Olympic team. They have a friendly on the 11th. I don't remember offhand who they're playing now that I think about that. And then Moise Bambito will be heading to the Netherlands and then to France with Canada as they have their first friendlies and the first actual international break under new head coach Jesse Marsh.
Colombia. They're playing Colombia 5:30 Saturday, June 8th. So be there, be square.
Thank you, Mark. And then I can't remember. I think there's an academy. I can't remember if Adam Beaudry also got a call. But in any case, Mark, those are the two big call-ups that we have. And we're currently recording this just after the U.S. Women's National Team finished their second of the two friendlies they had against South Korea. They won that game 3-0. And then I think one of the Colorado girls got a goal contribution tonight. I was in an Engineers Without Borders meeting, so I didn't get to watch that game, but I was on location with John Babiak covering the 4-0 Mallory Swanson and then Tierna Davidson both got braces on Saturday. So Emma Hayes' debut taking place in Commerce City, Colorado, and got off to a good start. So, Mark, lots of Colorado-related stuff going on this international break. What all do we think about it? What are we excited for with what Bassett can do at the Olympics, what Moise Bambito could do under a new head coach who has familiarity with his current club head coach at Copa America, and what do we think about the women could also do in Pelé?
I guess I'm most excited about Cole Bassett. I mean, I think his ascendancy from very talented young player in Colorado who got a couple chances to struggling player in Europe to guy who came back to the United States last year and was the kind of centerpiece of the worst Colorado Rapids team in team history. It's really quite the, you know, rags to riches to rags and back to riches tale about him. And so it's very exciting to see him on the Olympic team. I think the challenge will probably be we won't see him a lot. I don't expect that he'll start. I don't actually know. I have no idea what the lineup is going to look like. Because I still don't really... I remember Walker Zimmerman got named as one of the over 23s, but I don't know who the other two are. And I don't know that they've settled on that yet. So we're going to find out. We'll see in these friendlies who gets run and who plays. But I think, you know, going to the Olympics is this amazing opportunity, this rare situation for American players. We don't typically do very well at the Olympics on the men's side. Most years we actually haven't sent a team because we haven't qualified. This will be pretty exciting. You know, the possibility of ending up in the medal hunt would be really amazing. But, you know, to be honest, like, to be young and in the Olympic Village has got to be one of the most exciting things in the world. And, you know, it's just going to be an incredible experience for Cole Bassett. I am envious of him. I have been to the Olympics just once in 1984 when I was 7 years old in Los Angeles, and I got to see three events: women's volleyball, the first ever women's marathon, and some track and field that was really far away, and it didn't seem clear what was going on because it was just some dudes running around a track really, really far away, and the hammer throw. So it was very, you know, like, but it's going to be an awesome experience for Cole Bassett. Matt, what are you thinking coming of these matches coming up? And in addition to the U.S. women's national team at the Olympics, are you excited about Copa America?
Let's start with the USA men's at the Olympics, Mark. So first of all, they are in a group with France, New Zealand, and per USA Soccer, there's an Asia-Africa playoff. I haven't found off of a quick Google search when that is happening, but their first group stage match is against France. So I would assume I want to believe that we're better than New Zealand, Mark. There is no way that the USA Olympic team is worse than the national team formerly coached by Anthony Hudson. So, and then I have to think with it being a playoff seeding between Asia and Africa that we'll at least get out of the group. But to your point, you know, there's chaos can happen in the men's Olympic squad, but it's still often very much it can be the traditional powers that have a really good youth generation that get involved in that. Neymar led Brazil to a men's gold medal, their first gold medal in men's soccer. I think it was 2018, if I'm not mistaken. Or no, 2020 would have been. I can't remember when the men's Olympics this would have been that Neymar had led that. So it's going to be a tough test. The rest of the men's midfield for this group that just got called up, so not the final roster, but the group that just got called in for this period that includes Cole Bassett, includes Gianluca Busio and Tanner Tessman, who just got promoted with Venezia back up to Serie A, Benjamin Kermanski from Inter Miami, Jack McGlynn, who for me is probably fantastic and probably making a move to Europe, and then Aiden Morris as well. And there's also Rokas Huskstas, who is with Hajduk Split in Croatia.
Hajduk, I think it's pronounced.
Hajduk Splits. Oh, Frankie Hajduk. Duh. There you go, Matt. So, I mean, that's a really good group, Mark. Aiden Morris is fantastic with Columbus Crew and was a starter on a club that recently won MLS Cup and made it to the Champions Cup final. Jack McGlynn is very, very good for Philadelphia Union. And then Benjamin Kermanski, who's not a starter for Inter Miami, but there's a bunch of reasons for that. And the other guys are in Europe and starting and playing good for Europe. So Cole Bassett has some competition, but I do think he's the most versatile of those guys who at least I'm familiar with, Mark. So I can't speak to the Croatian guy, but everybody else I've seen in MLS, I think in person at this point. And so Bassett's the most versatile of them, and he's the most goal dangerous deep lying midfielder. So it'll be interesting to see, does he start in the game that they have coming up, and what does that look like as well? I'm really curious to see, Mark, what role Jesse Marsh has for Moise Bombito and whether or not he can work his way into a starting lineup, given that Jesse Marsh is a very tactics focused coach, but he also doesn't have a whole lot of time to implement his tactical ideas. That was maybe, Rabbi, the question I had for Marsh when it came to the USA job, him potentially getting it had Greg Berhalter not been rehired after the World Cup and Qatar, and just him being just a really meticulous guy and needing a lot of time in order to implement a lot of his tactical ideas, and whether or not he could simplify his Red Bullsian pressing high energy culture on a team that he doesn't spend every single day with is a curiosity that I have. So do we see a simplified version of that? I think it's certainly a leg up. You know, obviously Jesse calls or texts Chris Armas any time of day, and he's going to pick up. And if you ask him what he has to say about Moise Bombito, he's only going to get glowing reviews. And certainly Moise's skill set as a center back, having played a bunch of different positions, being a physical athlete, and then being a highly mobile center back who wants to do stuff going forward, I have to think is an asset. But I also wonder, given the amount of time that Jesse Marsh is going to have in order to repair, just one window, two games, both tough games on another continent, and then him coming back and having to decide a roster and then immediately starting out. I believe their first group stage game is actually against Argentina, if I'm not mistaken. Mark, that's not a lot of time. So does he go with maybe the old heads or the incumbent starters? And in that regard, is Moise Bombito a unused substitution as a center back? I'm kind of curious about. I liked what I've seen from Emma Hayes so far with the U.S. Women's National Team. It's great that he's starting the three Colorado girls. She said really nice things about Lindsey Horan, who I know there's been some questions about her role within the team and some of the public comments she's had and whether or not that is captain-like behavior. Not that Abby Wambach necessarily always engaged in that behavior. And, Megan Rapinoe certainly thrived on being a captain, but then also being being outspoken in terms of her own opinions about various things, soccer related or otherwise. So I think Emma Hayes was a really good hire and absolutely the right person for the job. And obviously this is a younger generation and there's a lot of competition for spots. I don't think any of the three Colorado girls at risk from missing out from the Olympics, but we saw how bad it was at the Women's World Cup last summer in Australia and in New Zealand, and there are expectations, and this is going to be a really tough Olympic group in terms of the competition around them. I think the Colorado girls will be involved. I think if the U.S. is going to medal, that those three are going to have to play a significant positive role on the team. I think Emma Hayes is a good coach, but now for the first time, certainly Mark, in our soccer punditry lifetime, there's a period where the U.S. is not just the presumptive favorite and on paper the better or the more talented or the best coached or the most prepared team on paper. And so there are going to be games certainly where the U.S. goes up and that's going to be 50-50, or there's times where if there's a couple injuries, they're going to be at a disadvantage and expectations are still metal, certainly. And I could not think of a more emphatic way of reasserting that you are still the cream of the crop when it comes to women's football in the world than winning a gold medal, given the failures at the Women's World Cup last summer. Anything else we want to say about that, Mark, or do we want to talk about the MLS All-Star Game voting?
We could do that.
So, listener, do that. We'll talk about this briefly, because normally holding the high line is All-Star Game agnostic, because a Rapids player has not made it to the All-Star Game since Tim Howard in 2017. But so voting is open for the All-Star Game, Mark, and you can go on the website and you can vote for your starting 11 and you get to nominate a captain. This is open to fans. And then also the media vote is available for people like you and me, Mark. You would have gotten a separate email about that. Don't share that link publicly, obviously. I won't be doing that. But so, Mark, voting is
available. I don't think I got one, but okay.
Oh, I'm sorry, Rabbi. But so
I'm all right. I'm all right. I'll be okay.
Voting's available. And Rapids fans, you can voice your opinion if you want to go in there and put all, you know, 11 Rapid starters in there if you think that Zach Steffen somehow is worthy of going to the All-Star game as a goalkeeper. But Mark, so those 12 spots are happening. And then Wilfred Nancy, who is coaching the MLS All-Stars this year because the game is taking place in Columbus, he'll have some votes. And then Don Garber will, of course, have some commissioner votes as well. Mark, if I had to pick the two players on the Rapids who are the most deserving, it's probably Moise Bombito as a young, exciting center back, and Cole Bassett, who, as of the end of the first half of the second leg of the Rocky Mountain Cup on May 18th, was probably, if the season had ended at that halftime, Mark, I think there's a number of pundits and people who are putting Cole Bassett as a best 11 midfielder in that roster. Since then, however, Cole hasn't necessarily been as great, and he's got some stiff competition at the 8 position, at the number 10 position, and Bombito's been involved in some pretty bad howlers on what has been a, you know, a landsliding defense. So, Mark, I think once again, unfortunately for Rapids fans, when it comes to the All-Star game, the fan voting is very much a popularity contest, and the traditional powers when it comes to fan bases, I think, are going to vote their people in. And Wilfred Nancy is going to go, I think, probably for a balanced approach of the most talented players who are available. And we know Don Garber is just going to go with, you know, who the big stars are. And in that regard, the Rapids don't necessarily have that type of name cachet because of the market, because of the players. And as good as Navajo has been since, you know, with the 5 goals in 5 games, which ended this past week at Houston, you know, he's competing with Chicho Arango and Lionel Messi and Luis Suarez, and he's not going to get in. Mark, I feel very confident that for another year, the MLS All-Star team will happen without a Rapids player participating in it. And in that regard, holding the high line will not be acknowledging it once that is confirmed.
Wow, that's harsh. I mean, this is, if I was going to go, this would be a good year to go because it's in Columbus. But I've already been to Columbus and it's a great stadium. But the next time I go, I want someone to invite me for like a bachelor party and rent one of their super dope suites and kind of do it up fully. They have like pitch side campfires and like you can order s'mores at pitch side. I mean, you have to like get the like, you know, fancy suite package, but the food there was awesome too. I really ate really well. I think I had nachos in a helmet, if I'm not mistaken. So there's just a lot of really good stuff there, and it's a really enjoyable experience. So props to Columbus. You guys deserve this. And, you know, I hope that the Rapids put some money into the stadium in the next 10 years so that we can get another All-Star out in Denver, because that was a lot of fun. I didn't go to the All-Star game when it was in Denver. I went to the Futures game, the rookie game, the whatever, the youth
game. Yeah.
And I had a blast. I thought that was just a hoot and a holler. So highly recommended.
Who would we know, Mark, who was on that team? The Futures game, like the homegrown team.
Oh my God. It was,
would
so
Bassett
long
or Vines
ago
have made it? Or no, this was,
it was
this would
before
have been
then. It was like, it was 2016. They were like still, they hadn't been identified yet. It was still Pablo Mastroeni was the head coach at the
time. Oh, so it was still, it would have been current homegrowns then. So it would have been like Jossie Zardes could have made that team, or
Jossie was already playing, I think, but yeah, Jossie, that's a great question.
Like Sean Davis in his first year with Red.
That's
Bull.
Also the kind of thing where, does the internet even have a record of who played in the Chipotle homegrown game in 2016? This is a good question.
Let's find out. Wikipedia's got to have something on this. So we were at, this would have been 2007, Mark. Dick's hosted the All-Star game in 2007, and the MLS All-Stars beat Celtic. I did not know that. That is news to me. And then it had to have been somewhere else recently. Or is, okay, 2015 MLS All-Star game. Here we go. And then, so if I do 2015 MLS Futures game, what comes up? Futures game. This is baseball, so that's not it. That was at Great America Park. I have to do, it says MLS, World Futures, MLS Cup 2015. Homegrown team versus Club America U20s. Here we go, Mark. Okay, let's see. What do we got? Justin Glad was on that team. Shane O'Neill of the Colorado Rapids was on that team. Eric Palmer Brown.
All right.
Jay Chapman from Toronto. I was right. Sean Davis from Red Bulls. Zach Pfeffer, then future Colorado Rapids player, was on that. Dylan Serna made the team. Harry Shipp. Do you remember Harrison Shipp with Chicago Fire, Rabbi?
Of course. Harry Shipp was great. I really liked him. He didn't have a long career, which is a bummer. He
deserved, and then he Tommy better. Thompson with San Tommy Jose Thompson. Earthquakes was also Hike on Train. That team.
One of the best players ever. Still love that guy.
Okay, listeners, if you went to this game and you somehow remember what Shane O'Neill and Dylan Serna were like when the 2015 Chipotle MLS All-Stars played the Club America U20s team, please let us know. I am not seeing... This is the article I found on MLSsoccer.com is a preview article. I have not seen what the score was. So I don't know what happened in that game. I don't know if Serna and Shane O'Neill started or what.
My recollection is that Club America blew them out. And also there were I was at the stadium and there were no fans for MLS. It was just people cheering for Club America from beginning to end. That was a little embarrassing, but to be expected.
Okay, then. All right. I think that's enough. Mark, handicap it for me. Do you think a Rapids player makes the All-Star game this year?
Zero no. Zero chance. The 101. Don't take your money to Vegas on that one. Bad idea. Do you think there's a chance?
No, I don't believe so. And that was that. So if I'm getting that right, Mark, so this would have been 2017. So this would have been the last year with Pablo. And then we started the last time a Rapids player made it to the MLS All-Star game holding the high line did not exist. That's how long it's been.
Yeah.
Andrew Wiebe, Matt Doyle, Don Garber, the soccer overlords, the Illuminati, if you are listening to this podcast, hear our cry. You cannot say that you are truly the MLS All-Star game representing MLS without proper representation. No All-Star game without representation for the Colorado Rapids, as far as I'm concerned. And until you do so, we will continue to be MLS All-Star Game agnostic. Oh, and then Rabbi Jason Maxwell would, of course, want to remind us that Rapids fans in the fan vote should actually be voting for Timbers players because the All-Star Game is the week after the end of the July period for league play. And so this would then tire out members of the Portland Timbers ahead of the opening group stage game for Leafs Cup as well. So I think we were all voting for Evander's getting into the All-Star game.
Also highly corrupt, but brilliant.
Yes. But so, yeah, we can put in Eric Miller, Mark, Diego Chará as well. Who's the goalkeeper they have from LAFC who's been not so great recently? Maxime Crepeau. Yeah, we could put Maxime Crepeau. And then the center back who's Canadian, who was with Inter Miami and then CF Montreal. Yeah, vote for them for MLS All-Stars. And then if you truly believe in the no All-Star game without representation, then you can token vote for Cole Bassett.
You are a devious bastard, Matthew.
Mark, shall we actually, we need to talk
about
last
Rapid
week.
Soccer.
Listeners, this past weekend, this past week, Colorado Rapids played two road games against MLS Western Conference opposition, who we thought on paper the Rapids could get a result against, and they proceeded to lose both games. They played Houston Dynamo, and they won that game 3-1. They got tarbelled by backup Houston goalkeeper Andrew Tarbell. First half, I thought, was relatively balanced. The Rapids did a lot of really good work in transition, and Houston got some opportunity off of set pieces. Navajo had a really great chance in the 27th minute that got saved, and that rebound fell to Kevin Cabral, who had time and space and supposedly an open goal. But Andrew Tarbell caught up to it, and he made the save. 40th minute, Bossy scores on a tap-in on a ball into the box from Griffin Dorsey to make it 1-0. Cole Bassett ran past a loose ball when him and Sam Vines and somebody else were battling at the edge of the box, and Sebastian Anderson and Moise Bombito didn't get to the cross as it came in. Zach Steffen maybe could have gotten to it before it got to Bossy. 40th minute, Kevin Cabral wins a penalty on a long ball from Keegan Rosenberry that gets through, and there's kind of a heavy touch. Houston doesn't really deal with it. Cabral takes a heavy touch, but Tarbell absolutely clears him out. Navajo's penalty is saved. That ends his streak of perfect pens and also his goal per game streak that Navajo had going on. He had 5 goals in 5 games, but then Georgi Mihailovic was Johnny on the spot, was Georgi on the spot for attachment to make it 1-0. Then both teams make some substitutes, and then it falls apart for the Rapids in the 70th minute. Latif Blessing scores on a long throw-in, on a corner. He was onside, on a ball that kind of got cleared, and then Zach Steffen didn't really deal with it, and Sebastian Anderson was on the goal line. It sneaks through them. That play was onside, and then in transition, you had Omer Fernandez get run into from behind on the edge of the box. Mark, I haven't looked back to this replay, so I think it was in position to be a penalty, but maybe contact was just outside the box. In any case, ball goes back and forth, eventually leads to a transition play, and Kovalchuk ends up scoring in transition on a 3-on-4 chance for Houston Dynamo, and Anderson and Bombito maybe don't do a good job of gap control, but Steffen lets it in on his near side, and that continued to hurt his post-shot expected goals period stat, and Houston gets out with a 3-1 win against the Rapids. Mark, this was another, we had a texting thread off pod where we talked about being kind of having some brain fog recently, and that being related to some stuff, not Rapids related, but also Rapids related. And we've talked a few times this week about documenting that the podcast can only be as organized and neat and have a narrative about it if the game happens that way. And in games where we're just kind of emotionally exhausted with the way that the Rapids defense was, the podcast and our recap of a match will in many ways mirror the state of the game or the oddity of the event, if you will. So, Rabbi's Choice, where do you want to start? Was this game structured enough for us to do big thing, bad thing, good thing?
I mean, mostly it was like just long enough ago because it was a midweek game that it's kind of hard to recall kind of the specifics of the match and try and figure out like what happened. Boy, that missed penalty. I feel like, and we should do the numbers and figure this out, that Navajo misses penalties at a slightly higher clip than he should. And that was kind of like a frustrating moment for me. Other than that, like, I think they're, in general, this team is, we kind of knew that going in, this one was going to be tricky. They had a 1-1 draw at the half, and then they kind of fell apart in the second half, and that kind of, like, wasn't super great. Darren Yappe appeared on the field and did not score. It was his 46th appearance as a Colorado Rapid without scoring a goal, and that's a lot.
That's got to be approaching, Mark. We need to reach out. You know, is there somebody at Opta or American Soccer Analysis, like, who we could look? What's the longest record for someone whose official position is a forward that they played in MLS before their first goal? So not like, you know,
Keegan
Rosenberry as a defender or a goalkeeper, but
I tweeted about outfield players who had gone many, many minutes without scoring goals, and even amongst players who play in the midfield and defense, you know, there comes a time where you kind of go, wow, that's a lot of minutes and no goals. Here's the thing that I tweeted for those of you who are not on the X anymore. Mystery player number one, 1,058 minutes, 2 goals, 3.9 expected goals, 4.8 XG plus XJ. XA. Mystery player two, 1,444 minutes, 0 goals, 3.9 XG, 5.9 XG plus XA. Mystery player number three, 610 minutes, 1 goal, 1.83 XG, 2.3 XG plus XA. So that's a lot of numbers, but the point is players 1, 2, and 3, who are they? And Which of those would you prefer more on your team? The one with two goals, the one with zero goals, or the one with one goal?
I'll take the one with two goals, Mark.
Right. So that's Jack McBean.
Okay.
Yes. Who Jack McBean, for listeners who don't remember, I believe he played in 2017 and 2018 for the Colorado Rapids when they did not really have a plan at striker. And just decided to go with a guy who used to play for LA Galaxy 2 and might be the right guy. And it didn't work out. Mystery player number two is, of course, Darren Yappe. Zero goals and 1,446 minutes. Although that was before Vancouver, where he continued to not score goals. Although he put in a good shift. He had a nice tackle and forced a turnover that nearly turned into a goal. But we're not on Vancouver yet. And mystery player number three, Matt, is Caleb Calvert, who I think most Rapids fans do not recall ever playing for the team and have no memory of or have never heard of him.
I think Rapids fans will remember Caleb Calvert before they remember Jack McBean. He was really? Here longer.
I'll yeah. take it. I disagree.
And
I
he would sub into games and like immediately thug a guy and get a yellow
card.
Well,
that's the one
he
was,
got
in.
He was more
that
memorable.
That was his famous moment, which is that he... He got into a situation in Philadelphia where he subbed into a game. He got into a altercation or he got fouled. He rolled off the field and then walked back on the field without the goal without permission, and immediately earned a red card and was sent off. That was basically the end of Caleb Calvert's career.
Legend.
Yeah, it was a not memorable.
He's in the
He has
Joe
a goal and Yappe doesn't. So.
He's in the Colorado Rapids Joe Nasko Hall of Fame, Mark.
He's in the Joe Nasko. We did something really terrible or we're remembered for being fairly incompetent.
He's right next to Max Alves.
Max Alves is up there. Charles Alondu is kind of like, might be deserving. He didn't do anything really terrible. Not like Joe Nasko level bad, but he just kind of flamed out. Juan Ramirez definitely is in there. Juan Ramirez, who was famous for, he played for the team for 2014 to 2015, maybe 2016 too. He came up from Argentina. They paid a transfer fee for him. He was a hotly touted rookie, and basically all he ever did was run with the ball forward and then fall down in the final third and have a turnover. That was
so
his.
Kevin Cabral. Mark, let's talk about the squad rotation, because that's something this week that I think was noteworthy. Jasper Lofelsen, I believe this was his first start. It was his first start certainly since the hamstring injury from about a month ago. Sebastian Anderson gave Keegan Rosenberry a rest as well, and then we saw Connor Ronan keep his spot in midfield, and this allowed Jasper and Connor to be in that double pivot, and that put Cole Bassett closer to goal, which I thought made the Rapids a little bit more dangerous in transition. Mark, Rabbi, what did we think of Jasper, and what did we think of Sebastian Anderson? For me, Anderson involved in all three of the goals conceded. I wouldn't say that he didn't get the biggest slice of blame pie on any of the three. Stefan Mark, I think, arguably has to save at least one of those three, but certainly, and I think Cole's at fault on the first one, running past the loose ball that would have created a transition moment. He just, runs past it and Griffin Dorsey fires it in. But Mark, what did we think of the squad rotation? Sebi, kind of bad, kind of disappointing, given this was his one opportunity. And Jasper, I thought, was okay, especially given Ollie subbed in by the time the two goals were conceded in the second half.
Yeah, I don't think anybody was notably terrible, and I don't think anybody was notably good in this game. It just felt like they didn't play poorly. They just, I kind of thought like, wow, Houston's really having a game. Like Amin Bassi was playing really, really well, and overall Houston just kind of took it to them. I thought that they looked really good as a home team, they were showing off for their crowd. So, I judge Lofelsen with rose colored glasses. I don't have I gotta be honest. I don't think I'm objective about him. I really like him. And I actually think after, Ollie LaRoz has had a couple of not great games, including Houston.
I don't think Connor Ronan has covered himself in glory in either of the games he's played recently. So I kind of am thinking, like, why not Jasper? So that's my two cents. And even though I'm not sure that he was that good in this game, I think he deserves a chance to kind of start in the midfield. So I don't know. This is this one is a funky moment, you know, overall. But you know, they kind of got blown out in the second half. It just, Houston came in waves and waves, and Colorado didn't stand up to it, and that happens. And so, but I think we're kind of in the midst of a sudden downturn where we are really kind of scuffling and struggling as a team. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah. If you look at some of the underlying numbers, it's not so bad, Mark. I tend to trust FotMob over MLSsoccer.com when they're different right now. So MLSsoccer.com has the XG for these games at 1.7 for Houston and 2.4 for Colorado. Take out the penalty. Well, I guess take out how much of those big opportunities were the goal that Georgie scored, which was basically a tap-in, and then the penalty from Hoffa that was ultimately missed. But FotMob has it as 2.25 for Houston and 1.69 for Colorado. Average about 0.7, 0.8 for the actual penalty itself. And so Houston was clearly the better team if you look at FotMob. If you look at MLSsoccer.com, they're about even from the run of play. So taking out the penalty miss from Navajo. But so if we look at FotMob, they've got the, you know, the XG for Georgie is almost 0.6. So 0.6 for that, and the penalty from Navajo was 0.8. So if I do the math on that, that's roughly like 1.4. So that's almost 90% of the Rapids XG just in that one sequence between the tap-in after the missed penalty and then the missed penalty itself. So the underlying numbers aren't great for that, and it was certainly a game that once it felt like, to your point, Houston was on the front foot for much of the game. I think it was even in the first half, but in the second half, I think Houston asserted themselves, and part of that might have been adjustments at halftime, and part of that might have also been the substitutions. You know, Markets, Latif Blessing was better than any of the substitutes the Rapids had on the bench. And this goes to a concern that I've kind of had recently, or that I've realized recently, that as much as we like the young players, as much as we like the homegrowns and everything, like, there's not a big immediate difference maker on the team right now. You know, like, there's not, you know, Michael Barrios had a streak where he had like almost a goal contribution per 90 coming off the bench last year, even when the Rapids were bad last year. And so, you know, it's Jackson Travis, who's a nice young kid and who we think well of, and I will criticize in a few minutes when we talk about Vancouver and goals conceded there. He's a guy for the future, but, you know, if I look at the benchmark, because there was more squad rotation for the Vancouver game than there was for this Houston game. So if I just look at who the typical substitutes are, well, you know, let's swap Keegan and Sebastian Anderson. So Anderson as a substitute isn't a super sub. He is a serviceable MLS average level young player for Keegan Rosenberry right now. But then it's Lalas Abubakar and Jonathan Lewis, Oliver Larraz. So let's swap Ali and Jasper Lofelson. We like Jasper Lofelson. He can lock things down. He's not a huge difference maker. But then it's Darren Yapi, Calvin Harris, Omer Fernandez was on the bench for this one, Jackson Travis and Adam Beaudry. So, Mark, we both like Calvin Harris. He does some good combination stuff with Cole Bassett. Is he immediately going to strike fear in the opposition when he comes off the bench? Not necessarily. Omer Fernandez in this role, I think, was a super sub. We'll get to my thoughts in a minute, but I think certainly, you know, could have drawn a penalty, is a guy that you fear. We've already talked about Darren Yapi. You know, we're kind of down on all of the Raws given what the team has looked like defensively in various sequences with him. And then Lalas Abubakar and Jonathan Lewis are known quantities at this point, and J-Lew isn't goal dangerous and is a very streaky, injury-prone player. And we both love Lalas Abubakar. He's a very physical player, but is he better than Moise Pambito? Is he better than Andreas Maxu? No. And if you look at it on the other side, you had Daniel Saris, serviceable center back who can lock things down defensively. I think Bartlow's fine. Is he better than some of the Rapid subs? Not necessarily. But then you have Latif Blessing, Mark, who we thought was great for LAFC and was a good part of New England Revolution at one point. And Sebastian Ferreira, who is finally back from being injured as well. You know, other MLS teams spend more or that aren't as focused on cheaper, younger players can have players who are ready to step in to a game and make the difference. And so rather than being passengers or a young guy that's going to come in and be a little frantic or try to lock things down. They're not somebody who's immediately going to impact. They're not necessarily raising the level. Or if they do, it's with their youth and their energy, or their, I mean this in a positive way, their almost naivete to the moment. And so I'm not saying that benches of, you know, Robin Fraser last year that had grizzled veterans who were over the hill necessarily is better in that regard. But we have to acknowledge that over the course of the last couple weeks, there's been games where the Rapids are in it in the second half. And even when Armas makes the right tactical shift in the second half or adjusts something that is better than what the opposing coaching staff has, the opponent has had higher end talent or more veteran substitutes who've come on and who have made a difference in those games. Rabbi, your thoughts?
On Houston? Or
I mean, am I making a good point that the Rapid substitutes have been younger and experienced players who have come in and have made mistakes, and the opponents have been able to bring in impact star players like Latif Bussing, who scores the goal? And when you compare that to Ali LaRaz relieving a Connor Ronan, who's not yet 90 minutes fit, knowing what we now know about Ollie and how he plays in the midfield and
I
the way the defense
saying.
Has conceded goals under him.
I'll spin it a little slightly differently, which is like to say the Rapids don't have an impact bench player is another way of just kind of like pointing out something that's really obvious, which is like we don't have a lot of depth. But compare with last year when we didn't have anything in the starting 11 that was like vaguely worth getting excited about, we are a lot better now, right? Now, the problems are we don't have a lot of depth beyond the 11, and there's not a lot off the bench that's really gonna, you know, we're gonna get to it with Jason Maxwell's question at the Ask HEHLs at the end, but like we're looking at midsummer transfer window upgrades at a couple positions. And I would say, without, you know, spilling the beans, like the Rapids are solid at like 8 positions out of 11, which is pretty good. It's a lot better than they were last year, where I would say they had 4 good players out of 11. 4, you know, bona fide MLS game changer starter type guys. This year, we're a little thin, and then the bench is a little bit, you know, thin. But most teams are in a situation where there's not a whole lot off the bench. Maybe they have 1 or 2 veterans who can come off the bench and do a thing. Maybe we need that. Maybe that's where we need to go. We need to be able to kind of get some of that, those depth players, the Graham Zusis, the Benny Fellhabers, the Kai Kamaras, those guys who are a little past their prime, but can do a job as well. That's one of the best soccer expressions. Actually, it's a sports expression, I think, more than a soccer expression, but he's a guy that can do a job. Talk about something that is an expression that makes a lot of sense within the sporting world, but for non-sportsy people, he's a guy that can do a job means almost nothing, right? Like, we're at 3% unemployment in America. 97% of Americans are a guy who could do a job, literally. All right, back to you, Matt.
I suppose, so the question I would then pose, Mark, is can these young players become more impactful with the limited first team minutes that they're getting, or through training or through opportunities that they get with Rapids 2, to where they can become that higher impact energy guy? Calvin Harris started last season as a guy who was clearly out of the 11, had a lot to work on in training, did a lot of work with other players, with Wilde Harris, who's now no longer at the club, and became a player that gradually the coaching staff trusted a little bit more and became a more impactful energy sub guy, and then eventually got to the point where he was starting games and having an impact in games. He scored, I believe, Mark, this was the press corps goal of the year, the winner that he had or that he set up in the New England game that had the walkout as well. But by the time things came full circle for Calvin Harris, and now it's to the point where there's plenty of games where if it makes sense tactically or with what's going on with like a minor knock that Omer Fernandez has had or squad rotation, that Calvin Harris can go out there and be a starter and can make some good plays and does not look out of depth. He looks like an average to above average MLS attacker and is a viable player. And in that regard, he's already much better than where he was at the end of last season and way better than where he was 14, 15 months ago. Can a Jackson Travis, can a Sebastian Anderson, I think Ollie's still probably a starter, so he's maybe in a different tier in that regard. Can these young players who previously don't have a history of being viable regular starters in MLS or being impact players off the bench in MLS? Can they get there by the time we get to September, even if they're not there now and they weren't there this week when the Rapids needed them to be there this week? Last two things that I'll say, Mark, I think the Omar Fernandez potential penalty there, let me pull up the quote that, because Chris Armas had two things, Mark, this week where he really criticized the referee, saying, so here's Chris Armas to the post-game media call that we had after the Houston game. Quote, I remember on one of the goals, Omar Fernandez looking back on the sideline, gets fouled in the box, probably a penalty. It comes down and it's a goal, as implying that it was the third Houston goal, I believe. I don't really understand how these plays are being looked at and it goes against us. It's a strange one, end quote. I think it's a 50-50 for me, Mark, you know, kind of going in, you know, does Omar go down a little bit easy? Is it kind of a physical play kind of a thing? Like I looked at it initially in the live shot and I thought that could be a foul, but I've seen players do more and not concede a foul. I have seen less contact lead to a penalty in the box. So it's kind of a 50-50 for me. I don't know. We'll get to this in a little bit, but in terms of the criticism, the frustration I have with pros so far this season with how VAR is being implemented is in how they're interpreting clear and obvious. So where, like I mentioned a couple weeks ago, where there was the potential offside goal that ultimately Minnesota had overturned in their favor getting called the goal, I don't know that that was clear and obvious, or it was as unclear and not obvious as the Kevin Cabral offside was when Keegan Rosenberry put the ball in the net at NYCFC. And so for that, I'm okay with it. I was okay with it not being checkmark. I didn't think it was clear and obvious. It's close enough where it's in enough of that intermediary period, or it's enough of a gray area or enough of a 50-50 that my default is to trust the call on the field from the official. But I can totally understand where Rapids fans would have been upset. And I completely understand, Mark, where Chris Armas is salty in that sequence then leads to Houston scoring. And as much as the Rapids struggled at times in this game, as much as they made mistakes on the goals that were conceded, if that's called a penalty, I bet Navajo scores, or, you know, does something different on that second penalty and scores. And then we're talking about a 2-2 draw rather than a 3-1 loss. And that certainly affects the game. Last two things that I'll say, Mark. Armas said emphatically that Navajo is his penalty kick taker. And I know this was his second miss. So he went from being 4-for-4 to being 4-for-6, the miss against Minnesota and then the miss against Houston. I think that shows confidence in your striker, but I would not be shocked, Mark, if in training there's at least an open competition that then allows Cole Bassett to get more involved in that. Georgie's already missed a penalty, so I don't know that you recycle him in that much, but, you know, Bassett was training with Kai Kamara as of like 2018, 2019 and working on penalties, and that's something that he's wanted. And if it turns out, I haven't been to a lot of trainings where they've practiced that and they've been like keeping score on who's taking those, so maybe Navajo is still better at that than Cole is when it comes to taking pens against Adam Beaudry or Chris Sharpie or Zach Steffen. But I would be open to having a conversation on that. If Navajo is still as good in training as he has been, I would trust him to take another penalty, and I would trust him to make one again on that. And then, Mark, do you notice the physicality from Houston? There was another play where Andreas Maxu goes up in the first half for a header on attacking corner, and he ends up under a Houston player, and a Houston player falls down. And I made a joke on Twitter about how Houston Dynamo players needed to stop hurting Andreas Maxu. I fear for that man's well-being and fitness, Mark, should the Rapids play Houston Dynamo in the playoffs this year. Anything else, or shall we move on to Vancouver?
We can move on. I think Houston is a playoff ready team. I think they're really, really, they're really solid. I think they started off poorly. Hector Herrera was injured. I think they're rounding into form. They got a lot of nice pieces. Griffin Dorsey's having a very good season so far.
Agreed.
Former Colorado Rapids two player Griffin Dorsey. So, although he was actually U23. Sorry. My apologies.
Should have had him in the academy, Mark. He'd be so great. Oh well, God. I guess he'd be competing with Sam Vines. Or would we move him up? He'd be a winger. We'd have Griffin Dorsey instead of Kevin Cabral. I do that deal, Mark. Damn good
I
deal.
I think he played for Real Colorado. I think that's why we didn't have an academy claim on him. So, but we also let him go to Indiana. So a lot of players go from Real Colorado to the Colorado Rapids. It happens all the time. But he didn't, for whatever reason. So,
Moving on, this past Saturday, June 1st, the Colorado Rapids played Vancouver Whitecaps, and they lost this game 2-1 at the death on a slow roller mark, and it was very, very heartbreaking, especially given how the game against Houston went. Jordy Mihailovic had a great opportunity in the 8th minute off of a back heel that was set up by Kevin Cabral that was just wide of the near post. Mihailovic, Mark, was feeling, he was saucy.
He was on! He was so on!
Yeah.
And he had that great goal. He was great.
Yeah,
great.
He was Samba soccer, certainly. Him and Kolbasset pulling out the not the joysticks. What is it? I think it's the L. I can't remember what the terminology you have for FIFA on that, but they were pulling out the flicks and tricks, certainly. Tiki taka. But so Brian White had a couple really good opportunities in the first half. I thought the Rapids were about to take the lead on a penalty, Mark, and I wasn't sure who was going to be taking this one in the 31st minute when Kevin Cabral gets played through and he cuts inside on Laborda, I believe it is, and the penalty is initially called, but then VAR looks at it and determines that it was not a penalty. Cabral kind of takes his, increasingly it's looking like a Ronaldo chop, Mark, but one that has a little bit too much on it where the ball kind of gets away from him. And he was probably still going to catch up to the ball, but then he ends up running into Laborda. Laborda's kind of already in that position, but is also backing away, trying to not foul him. And I don't know if Cabral, like, intentionally in, like, a I'm going to run into you to try and earn a penalty, makes contact with the player, but I think contact was avoidable, and Laborda was taking clear action to try and avoid that contact. If this was a basketball game, Mark, the call would have been Cabral called for charging rather than it being a blocking foul on Laborda. I agreed with the way that it was officiated, but certainly, as we'll get to, a number of people in the Rapids community are certainly upset with it. Vite hits the crossbar in the 42nd minute, and then Cabral has a great opportunity that's saved on a kind of a double deflection from one of those Georgi Mihailovic back heels in first half stoppage time. And then we see two goals to open second half. Sebastian Burhalter left open at the near post from Jackson Travis, who made his first start for the first team in MLS play in this game, set up on a really good cross by Ryan Gauld, and he taps it in with Stefan at the near post to make it 1-0. And then 44 minutes later, in the 50th minute, Georgi Mihailovic makes it 1-1. Absolutely fantastic sequence where Kevin Cabral picks up the ball in midfield, dribbles his way almost in like a 360 out of the pressure, dribbles forward, gets it to Kolbasset. Bassett backheels it to Omer Fernandez. Omer Fernandez squares it. Kevin Cabral is already making a run to then draw a defender to then create the space for the ball to get through and Georgi Mihailovic to have time to look up and then perfectly one-time it into the back of the net. Absolute burgundy sauce. Thank you very much. 1-1. 60th minute, Zach Steffen with a turnover, and Brian Gauld tries a Kolbasset at RSL moment that he completely misses the net on. You had Rafael Navajo just hit just wide of the post in the 80th minute. Omer Fernandez had that great play, Mark, where he in the 85th, where he cuts inside and curls it, and it hits the outside of the post on another day.
Beautiful.
That goes in. It's going back and forth. Both teams are getting chances, and it was just about who was going to make their chance or who was going to make a mistake to then make it a really easy goal. And surprise, it was the Colorado Rapids on a throw-in, and it was Zach Steffen and the team being onside because the fullbacks didn't step up. First minute of stoppage time, ball comes in, and it falls. Ryan Gauld, I think, attempting a shot, it ends up falling to substitute Demir Krylatch, former RSL striker, and the fullbacks didn't step up when the center backs did, so the fullbacks kept Demir Krylatch on goal with Zach Steffen right there, 1v1, and the center back stepped up to try and make him offside, in doing so leaving him open, and Steffen gets a piece of it and it rolls just past him with Sam Vines trying to catch up to it. And that's all she wrote, Mark, and the Rapids lost 2-1. Rabbi's choice, where would you like to start?
We've desisted from big thing bad thing bold thing.
I thought
the first 30 minutes of this game were really entertaining. I really thought the first 10 especially, but just very upbeat. Both teams kind of going at each other. Colorado really doing things in transition. Gauld and White for Vancouver had really nice chemistry and were like kind of charging at the Rapids and were even more aggressive in transition than Colorado was. And for Colorado, it was almost the inverse, which was Cabral and Mihailovic had really good chemistry. They connected on, I think, three plays in the first 30 minutes, and one of them wound up being that goal that Mihailovic put in, although that was was that? That was like in the 47th or something like that. It was like 45 plus two for the Rapids or something. But yeah, it was a really enjoyable game. Again, I think I mentioned this in the Houston game. I tipped it off. Like, Connor Ronan was kind of invisible, didn't look particularly meaningful. And I feel like our midfield is really, really strong with two out of three players. You know, Laraz hasn't been great. Ronan hasn't been great. So, you know, I think finding a number six who's either a shuttler or a shutdown defensive player, you know, kind of like somebody who's just really going to aggressively tackle and charge around and cause mayhem would be a really good thing. I don't know if Chris Armas wants to play that way, but it'd be a valuable addition to the team. It was in the 50th minute for Georgie's goal. This was his best game as a Rapid, in my humble opinion. You mentioned it, that curled ball by Omir Fernandez in the 85th minute off the post was like a thing of beauty, and then toink and out. Fernandez is kind of hard bit. It feels like he, I was going to look it up before the podcast to see if he had any goals this year. I don't think he does, right? He has, Matt thinks he has one goal. Matt says he has one goal.
I'll look it up.
Yeah. You know, like it's a challenge because on the one hand, they sent a lot of the balls down Cabral's side. And at some point I was kind of like, hey man, give Omir Fernandez a chance to do stuff. Omir Fernandez hasn't really kind of lit it up. So there's a good reason that they're not kind of going down the left side a lot, but it begs the question of, like, you know, which of these two players would you more likely upgrade? I was a big proponent of Omir Fernandez as your go-to starter at the beginning of the season on that side. I'm starting to think, like, I'm not really sure, but, like, you know, Johnny Lewis, I looked it up before we started. He only has 120 minutes in 8 appearances for the Rapids this year. I think he's gotta be gone at the window, if only because
I don't think he has trade value, Mark.
No, but, like, he's gotta be begging the management, like, please get me out of here. Like, they're not using me. I have no career. He's 26 years old, Matt. I mean, he is not an old, useless player. He is still a guy who could do a job. That's my expression for the podcast. But, like, he's got to go down a division. He's got to go over to a team somewhere else where he can be of use. He's just not being productive. The other, you know, possibility that you start there right now is Calvin Harris. So I actually think, you know, going with Calvin Harris as your everyday starter on the left side is not a terrible idea. And mixing Cabral and Omir Fernandez on the right side was my preferred kind of move. But anyways, I think Vancouver deserved this win. I thought they played really well. They were really, really putting the Rapids at sixes and sevens past the 70th minute. And so when the dam broke in 90 plus one, I was kind of like, yeah, that was coming. But I was still disappointed. I thought we could squeak out, you know, the 1-1, but we didn't. And we picked up no points this week.
I agree with you, Mark. I'll say for Georgi Mihailovic, this was his best performance in a Rapid shirt from the run of play. There's been plenty of games where he's done a lot on set pieces. So like the LAFC game, for example, the assist to Bombito, and then the direct free kick goal. But certainly from a run of play standpoint, this is the best that we've seen Georgie. And I thought that was really impactful, especially given the squad rotation. Fact check, Omir Fernandez has one goal and two assists in 871 minutes played. Mark, you want to guess what the XG would have been on that shot he had in the 85th minute that hit the post?
I think it was probably low, like 0.1.
0.04, so a 4% chance of being goal. So he puts it, what, 6 inches, Mark, to the left, curling more, a little bit more, and that probably goes off the inside of the post and then into the far side, or I guess the near side, the opposite side netting, if you will. And we're looking at a spectacular goal. His one goal, I believe this was the one against San Jose, had a 0.05 expected goals, and then counting for the shot on target, the expected goals on target was 0.36. So Omir loves a fantastic goal. He loves a worldie, certainly. let's talk about some other stuff. Mark, to go back to the penalty real quickly, did you have any disagreements on the final decision on that? Do you agree that that wouldn't have been a penalty for Kevin Cabral first half?
Yeah, no, it wasn't. I mean, when it got called, I was kind of like, the broadcasters were kind of noting, like, this is this referee's first game in Major League Soccer, and he's letting him play, and da 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 da. And I think there was a lot of questions about, like, does this guy know what he's doing? And then when VAR overturned the decision, I was kind of like, yeah, that makes sense. So, you know, if the defender gets in your way while you're dribbling with the ball or as you're going through the goal, and in a way that is like, you know, you're cross-checking, basically, then it's a penalty. If you release the ball, the defender is backing up, and you run into him, it's your fault. That's basically what happened with Kevin Cabral, that he was kind of like trying to go through the man when the man was backing up. Like, he didn't stand his ground. He was backpedaling, and Cabral ran into him anyway. So I thought it was the right call. That's me.
Let's talk about squad rotation. Mark, Darren Yapi starts this game, gets a yellow card, did some good pressing stuff, but as we've discussed, has not been goal dangerous. Lal Zububakar with a rare start as well.
Yeah.
Bombito came off the bench, which I was kind of surprised. You'd think that Armas would have planned for Bombito to start the game in Canada, that he would have been up for that, especially given the recent call-up. I thought Lawless was decent, Mark. Wasn't at fault on either of the goals. He wasn't on the field for the second one. But a physical presence measured, and maybe, you know, where Moyes still has to be the master of the basics, as Chris Armas and the coaching staff would put it. I think there's times where Moyes thinks that he's so talented and he's so excited that he tries to do too much. And I think there was something to be said for, given how the Rapids played in Houston, that Lawless Abubakar came in, and anytime he was in possession, he kept it really simple, straightforward from a passing standpoint, and didn't make any mistakes. Where Moyes tries to do something in possession, and that can lead to him trying something that has some risks associated to it, and then ultimately he ends up turning it over, and then there's a jailbreak transition moment for the opponent. And so I think there's something to be said for just a center back that's just going to be like, quick tempo, really simple, keep the ball moving, be a cog in the machine, and be a piano carrier rather than trying to play the piano out of the back, if you will. Mixing up my metaphors. So Darren Yapi, we talked about him. And then the other start would have been Jackson Travis, Mark, who, let's take away his sequence on the goal that was conceded where he gets caught ball watching and totally leaves Sebastian Berhalter open to run on goal and go 1v1. With Stefan from a sharp angle. Take out that play, Mark, and this is just another appearance for me, that Jackson Travis looks the part compared to some of the other young players that the Rapids have and doesn't look like an out-of-the-depth player, and I think is gradually getting better from an offensive standpoint and from a possession standpoint in terms of him going forward. I thought he looked better attacking-wise than he did coming off the bench against Portland Timbers, but all of this has to be said with the caveat that he made one mistake and it led to a goal. And we'll talk about this in a little bit, but the Rapids defense, again, didn't have a really good week. And there's not one thing other than, we'll get to a stat as it relates to the goalkeeper. There's not one thing that the defense in front of the keeper is doing wrong. They're giving up goals in different areas of the pitch, or when they're getting attacked from different angles and they're doing it from different sequences. It's been on throw-ins. It's been on corners. It's been playing out of the back, possession, rest defense. It has been in transition as well. So there's not one thing to break that down, Mark. But as Keegan Rosenberry has had two really good lines for me recently when I've asked him about this, and he mentioned that the goal in soccer is to think collectively. There's still a work in progress in that regard. And I think tactically, Chris Armas is still working on what that looks like for them to understand what they're supposed to do in different moments to then think collectively without having timeouts and chances to talk about things and communicate as quickly as they would want to. And then he's also said that there's maybe it's a focus, a mentality thing that maybe that they're still working through. And that to me is more of the red flag, Mark, because that sounds like something similar that would have been a problem in 2022 that was horrible in 2023. And Armas was brought in. One of the things that Pork Smith has told me he really liked about Armas was being compact defensively and not beating yourself. And the Rapids are making mistakes that is making it easy for them to beat themselves. And that starts with your young, homegrown left back not totally watching the ball on a long ball that is coming towards him and seeing an opponent who does not score a lot of goals and Sebastian Berhalter run on goal for a tap-in. That is a concern for me. Mark, anything that you want to say about squad rotation, Jackson Travis, Darren Yapi, or can we get to the elephant in the room that is Zach Steffen?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think I was fine with both players doing, you know, coming in. Lalas Abubakar did fine. I was glad to see Jackson Travis get into the match. I didn't think he was offensive, meaning he didn't offend me with his play, not that he wasn't an offensive presence. It was fine. It was good. He got some run. That's a good experience for him. You know, squad rotation is important. You can't just keep going, especially if this team's going to make the playoffs. They need to be rested and guys got to be healthy. So it was fine. And I actually am always a big fan of squad rotation because, to your point before, if we want to find out which players can come off the bench in critical situations and be contributors, they need to get those opportunities as starters to get 60, 70 minutes where they look good, they play well. And then you say to yourself, oh, that guy did a good thing. Let's give him, you know, 15 minutes at the end of the game, see if he can change the situation, change the script. I think the thing that you're mostly noting, Matt, is that we don't have game-changing attacking players right now that can come off the bench. And clearly, based on Darren Yapi's continued inability to score goals, we don't have a guy who can sub in as an attacker and affect the game. So, like, Rafael Navajo is basically, he's been good, and that means, and Yapi has been ineffective, and that means that the default position is Navajo goes for 90 every game, which is an ideal. You want to be able to put in a speedster who's going to change the game, who's going to change the look, who's going to cause problems. And we don't have that.
I want to touch on that, Mark, actually, before we get to Zach Steffen. Because I thought it was noteworthy, the Rapids training plan for this week, Mark, is they've been given the whole week off. I've seen it, albeit under different managers, so different plans. Normally when there's an international break, they'll at least have like a Tuesday, Wednesday short session. But Armis mentioned that, you know, that the team was feeling really leggy and the squad rotation was really out of necessity for that. That's why Keegan Rosenberry didn't play 270 minutes in this three-game week. That's why Jackson Travis got a start, why Darren Yapi got a start. And so I think I agree with the decision to ultimately give the players some time off. You know, I think it's a chance for them to reset. Obviously, like, the facilities are still going to be open. Like, I'd be willing to bet you that Omer Fernandez and Jasper Lofelson, you know, at 8 a.m. tomorrow are going to be on the treadmill or out there training with one of the training staff members. But, you know, I do think this team was leggy. I do think ultimately having the two road games, not just the two road games, Mark, but you're talking about going to Houston and then going to Vancouver and coming back to Colorado for 2 days in the middle. That's a tougher week than saying like doing San Jose and then staying in California and then going to like one of the LA teams or going to Portland. So that's a lot of miles in terms of on an airplane, and that's a lot of miles run as well. Cole Bassett is still number one in MLS in terms of ground covered. Moise Bombito, I think, is top five in terms of center backs. Keegan Rosenberry gets up and down. Sam Vines gets up and down. They got a lot of minutes in them. And so I think maybe this is a learning moment, Rabbi, for Chris Armas in terms of spreading out his squad rotation. So rather than changing three or four guys in one game for a three-game stretch, maybe you have mostly the same starting 11, but you change one guy, well, you change out one starter per game, and then you change out like what your substitution sequence is. So normally we wouldn't think that if Keegan Rosenberry's starting, unless there's an injury, Keegan's going 90 minutes, but maybe you take off Keegan and you give Sebastian Anderson 25, 30 minutes as well. So I think maybe the squad rotation got backloaded in terms of where the schedule was out of necessity. And then maybe also, as we mentioned, the Rapids are a work in progress. Chris Armas is working to bleed the youth so that right now they're going through their lumps in the middle of the season so that they're ready to go for September, October. So can Jackson Travis, can Jasper Lofelson, can Calvin Harris become impact substitutes with what they're working on and making mistakes on and learning from those mistakes right now? Can they become that by the time we get to the fall period? And can this team build up fitness to where they need a little bit less squad rotation? And maybe the coaching staff is figuring out what they have in players and they can do a better job pushing certain buttons or making certain tweaks from a personnel standpoint gradually and have that spread out over the course of a busy schedule rather than loading it onto a game at Houston and then really having to load it on for the final game before an international break. Those are the questions that I'm curious about going forward with the Rapids, given that they're going to come back. I believe it's another 3-game week, Bart, because I think it's Austin, then I can't remember who they have, and then Saturday, and then it's going to be a Thursday, Sunday in the case of 4th of July, and that's going to be here in a month at time of recording. Mark, let's get to Zach Steffen. I was tipped off by friend of the pod, Jason Maxwell, who I hung out with on the weekend. We went to go see a USL2 game. We saw Flatiron take on Albion locally in Lafayette, Colorado. And Matt Doyle's column, Mark, here I'm going to quote straight from it, commented on the Rapids defense. So here's Matt Doyle, MLS armchair expert. Quote, they've conceded 13 goals from those four games. And while I'm not pointing the finger solely at Zach Steffen, the bad data is starting to pile up. In American Soccer Analysis Database, which goes back to 2013, Steffen's got the worst shot stopping marks by a mile of any keeper with more than 1,500 minutes in a season. To put it into perspective, Pedro Gallese, given up 0.3 more goals per 90 than he should. So in terms of what is his expected goals against, what is the opponent's XG, and then what do they actually concede, Gallese is conceding about a third more than average on that. Going back to Doyle's quote here, no one in the ASA database has more than +4 or worse. Steffen right now is at +0.55. So listeners, what does that mean? That means that compared to an average MLS goalkeeper, an average MLS starting goalkeeper, Zach Steffen is conceding 0.5 more goals per his XG than any keeper has. To put it rather bluntly, Rabbi Mark Goodman, in the 11 years that American Soccer Analysis has been tracking this stat, Zach Steffen has had the worst half season of MLS starting goalkeepers by a mile. And there's a lot going on to the defense. There's a lot that the defense in front of him isn't doing well in front of him. So there's a similar William Yarbrough effect here of the numbers are reflected on him when there's a lot going wrong against him. But just from a shot stopping standpoint, Mark, Zach Steffen hasn't been good, and he's been worse than he was in Columbus as well. I don't know what the answer is there, other than simply Zach Steffen needs to start saving the ball.
We don't have a very good goalkeeper right now. We paid a lot of money for him. I don't think we're hearing a lot of MLS television commentators using the phrase that they were using at the beginning of the season. Zach Steffen is trying to work his way back into the national team setup.
Nope.
Because, at this point, he's just probably trying to save his job, hold on to his job. I don't think he's at risk of losing his job, but mostly just because Adam Beaudry's a kid, and I don't think he's likely to take the job away from him. But we should really consider it. I mean, that's how bad things are. We're at the point where, like, he's probably below quote unquote replacement player level, which means go get anybody out of USL and they'll probably do a better job. That's rough, but that's where we're at. You lay down the numbers. I don't need to. But I think I was ahead on the curve on this. I think I mentioned this like 8 weeks ago. I think I mentioned it again 3 weeks ago that like Zach Steffen hasn't been good. Math says Zach Steffen hasn't been good. The specific I think that you're talking about other than Matt Doyle is that it against Vancouver, the final goal that he let in from Demir Krylak was softish.
Yeah.
He got a hand to it. He stopped it, and then it trickled in. Those trickle in goals, they really never should go. Goalkeeping is more than shot stopping. It's positioning. It's claiming. Right. Like saves are only part of what a goalkeeper does. A lot of time, a goalkeeper will make a play on a ball or intercept a ball, and it won't count as a save, but it's something that they did. And I think all the metrics on Steffen, except for maybe out of the back distribution, are rough and not great.
Yeah, those those barely goals or the soft goals, Mark, need to turn into saves. And not just saves, but good saves where you collect the ball and then allow your team to build out, not just turn into rebounds that then are 50-50 for possibly offside attackers to then just tap in or Chicho Ronga to score a brace against you. Mark, we're going to get to another really good Ask HDHL from Jason Maxwell. But first, tell our listeners how they can support Holding the High Line and fundamentally get scammed by the psyop that is HDHL.
Listeners, you should totally help out this podcast in a variety of different ways. The main way to do it is just to like and subscribe and leave a review on the podcatcher that you use. If it's Spotify, if it's iTunes, if it's anything else, that'd be great. The best way to support us other than that is to subscribe to the HDHL Substack. Go to holdingthehighline.substack.com and click subscribe. Become a free subscriber and you'll read some of our goody good content, which will be great. We really appreciate it. We put out between 2 and 4 articles a month, plus we throw some stuff behind the paywall, like little audio nuggets that we'd love to give to you. If you like what you're seeing there, and if you really like this podcast and you'd like to help put a tip in our jar and buy us a beer, go ahead and on the HDHL Substack, click the subscribe to become a paid Highliner. That means that you'll be supporting us at either $5 a month or $48 a year. It'll entitle you to a free t-shirt. I'm wearing the free t-shirt right now. It's camo gray or jet black with the Holding the High Line logo done by Dwayne Brown, who we love. We really appreciate him. Yeah, that's about all I got for us. We were also selling t-shirts, but honestly, hasn't been a lot of call for that. Most people just want to become Highliners. So do that. We appreciate you. Back to you, Matt.
At Rapids Jason asks us this Ask HDHL. Am I crazy for thinking this might be a better starting 11 right now? So it's a 4-4-2 diamond. Stefan's still in goal. Same back five. Bynes, Maxu, Bombi, Rosenberry. At the base of the diamond is a summer number 6 signing. So presumably, Mark, that is Lamine Diok's loan expiring. The Rapids not picking up the option and getting an actual number 6 who can actually play. In the Shuttler's role in the 8, on the right, we've got Cole Bassett. On the left, we've got Kevin Cabral, Georgi Mihailovic at the 10, and then Dom Baji and Rafael Navajo up top. Dom Baji, listeners, was playing in the second division in Turkey this past year after he wasn't retained by FC Cincinnati after winning the Supporter Shield. And just recently, he and the club, who I'm not even going to attempt to pronounce his name, came to a mutual agreement to terminate his contract. So presumably he's available, Mark. I don't know if FC Cincinnati still has the rights to him, but I can't imagine that that would be expensive. I've spoken to Dom Baji when he scored here last season, Mark, with FC Cincinnati, and he said Colorado's still home. He was super respectful in the way that he did not celebrate this goal. Tell me, Mark, that right now Dom Baji, out of contract, over the age of 30, would not take a veteran minimum 1+1 to come back for Colorado, be that bench striker, be an energy guy, just be happy being back in Denver, playing with a lot of speed, as we know, be an average finisher at best. That would then be, he would then be the foil, the backup to Rafael Navajo, worst case scenario, that would then free you up from a depth chart standpoint to actually send Darren Yapi out on loan to a championship team, get his goal scoring form back. All of this has so many good potentials as well, Mark. But specifically, so what do we think of that? And what do we think of Jason's idea of going to a 4-4-2 diamond to have the foil between Navajo and Baji, and then move Cabral further away from goal to do a lot of the good non-attacking things that we have praised him for so far this season?
Listen, okay, we'll start with the second part first. I like the 4-2-3-1. I like the way it's working. I think we actually functionally, and I've mentioned this a little bit on the Twitters, but I don't know that I've ever said it on this podcast. I think the team has actually functionally gone with two strikers on multiple occasions, that Cabral kind of leads the line and moves up. A lot of times at certain phases in the attack, and it had happened in this last game against Vancouver, Ronan and Bassett were alongside each other, and then the other four players, the central midfielder, the striker, and the two wingers, were leading the line
kind of up front, which is kind of a version of a 4-4-2 or the 4-2-2-2. All formations shift in different phases of the attack, so this is not that different. But I've seen games where we really look like we were playing with two strikers, and usually it was Cabral and Navajo. So that is, I'm going to put aside. I'm going to say 4-2-3-1, 4-4-2, the two morphing into each other, fine. Back to Dombaji. 350 minutes of Dombaji, great. 500 minutes of Dombaji, great. Starting Dombaji every week alongside Navajo for 1,500 minutes for the rest of the season as the thing that's going to win us MLS Cup, not great. Not an idea, right? Not a good idea. What you want to get out of Dombaji is kind of like end-of-career Alan Gordon, Kai Kamara-level production. You want a guy who can come in for 15 minutes and occupy a center back, who will post up, who will, you know, who has a little bit of, you know, break speed in the gaps and will cause problems. You get a guy who maybe will score you three goals for the rest of the year, which, if I'm honest, I'm not sure Darren Yappe's going to do. So that's what you get. You also get that kind of salty veteran in the presence in the locker room that Drew Moore was in his final 2 years with the Rapids. That's a valuable thing. You know, guys who've been there, guys who kind of help you to finish things off. I remember in 2016, the Rapids added Sebastian Latou from Philadelphia. He didn't really contribute much, but he was a veteran presence. He was a calm dude. Everybody really liked him. I think overall people felt like he was a good contribution. So Dombaji back from second division in Turkey, I say yes to that, but I also say that's not your big purchase. That's your, we're going to spend $150,000 and milk this for all it's worth and see if we can't squeeze a goal or two out of the Golden Goose. But I do think the team needs to put some more energy into some other bigger, better, splasher ideas, especially if other teams in MLS are going out and getting Marco Reus and trying to get Kevin De Bruyne and all these huge players. Like, we can go and spend like $1 million, can't we? I mean, if we could squeeze that money out somehow.
LA Galaxy, you get Marco Reus on a TAM deal, we counter with Dominic Baggi. No, so I think I don't think it works on the diamond mark because I think I just, Pork is wedded to the system that they want to have and the approach that they want to have, and the diamond is not conducive to that. It's not something that we've seen from Bruce Armas. So, Jason, it's a nice hypothetical. It'd be a fun thing to try on Football Manager or on FIFA or EAFC at this point. I don't think it's realistic. But if we're going to morph to that a little bit, Mark, I think there's a possibility for you to do, you could go full Red Bulls, a 4-2-2-2. Dombaji, from a stylistic standpoint, would be a good complement to Navajo up top. I agree with you, Mark, that if Dombaji is coming back for the Rapids, which I would be totally here for, it is as a substitute. It is as possibly a winger option or bench relief for Navajo that then frees up Darren Yappe to go somewhere else have a soft landing spot somewhere in the championship. I don't think it's at Dombaji being a starter, but if there is a halfway point between Jason's hypothetical and what I think is plausible, I do think it's playing around with like a 2021 style Rapids 4-3-3, where you've got a true number six, two dual eights, which I think can absolutely be Bastin and Georgi Mihailovic. They can play off of each other. And then you've still got true wingers on the team to do true winger stuff, whether it's Omer Fernandez, Kevin Cabral, Calvin Harris, certainly, and Navajo still to be the number nine in that role, certainly. I think Connor Ronan can be that number six. I think Gaspar Lofelson can be that six. I think what you end up doing, Mark, if I had to guess what I would want the Rapids to do at this point, Mark, I think we're in agreement. It's work down to try and get a more reasonable or a better or a more favorable transfer fee from Navajo. I did write an article for Burgundy Wave on this. I'll put a link in the show notes on that. Obviously, Tom Bogert has reported that they're trying to do max TAM. So, Mark, if we could cut the transfer fee in half or into two-thirds with Navajo, pay like $3 million or less for that, and then get him on a TAM deal as well, and then you don't pick up Lamine Diak because I think that's just not happening. I think you then take that U22 slot, the TAM money that was allocated for Diak's salary, and then the international roster slot, and you go out and you roll the dice on another number six, or you bank on some combination of Ronan, Laraz, Lofelson, to work at that position and you go get another winger. And you could do that in addition to paying peanuts on the dollar for a hometown discount for Dombaji to come back where he's happy. And so I think you could end up doing that. And I think that that player could also work in a 4-3-3, or the Rapids could keep doing what they're doing in the 4-2-3-1 and just have some tactical changes and some little tweaks, some tinkering to the phases of play and their approach. And as Keegan Rosenberry mentioned, have a slightly better mentality, be a better work in progress, work on some of the mistakes they've made, as Chris Armas said, and think collectively, particularly from a defensive standpoint in the defensive third. Anything else, Rabbi, or shall we get out of here?
I'm getting sleepy.
Listeners, you can follow us on Twitter at @soccer_rabbi, at @LWSMattPollard, and at @Rapids96Podcast. Send us your questions just like Jason did using the hashtag AskHEHL. We're on Facebook. You should like us on Facebook if you're still on the Book of Faces. If you want to send us Band of Brothers fan fiction or longer form AskHTHLs, you can email us at Rapids96Podcast@gmail.com. Check out our Substack, holdingthehighline.substack.com. That's where you can become a paid Highliner, get some merch and better support, and get scammed by this KSE-funded PSYOP that is Holding the Highline with Rabbi and Raved, Rabbi and Red. Tell Rapids curious people in your life about us. We're on a bunch of podcasts. Podcatchers, you can find us really, really easily. I'm sure there is a Gen Z coworker you have who has established healthy boundaries with a bunch of things and is generally cynical about life. Destroy those healthy boundaries and make them even more cynical about life by introducing them and turning them into Rapids fans by having them listen to Holding the Highline with Rabbi and Red. Listeners, we're going to scale back a little bit for the international break. So we will be back next week to talk to you. And that'll be probably just to preview the Austin FC game and maybe look ahead to the rest of the week and certainly talk about the homecoming and the revenge of Diego Rubio that will be impending on the Burgundy Boys on June 15th. But until then, enjoy your international break. Enjoy your weekend without Rapid Soccer, and send us pictures of you adventuring, of you touching grass, or of the hotel art that you encounter on your adventures out of town. We'll see you next week.
I'm just going to play Fallout a lot. Peace.